That little pamphlet is in the back there. If you want one on your way out, you can grab one. It's called Introduction to the Counseling Process. And it's just meant simply to help you take what you learned today and take it with you and try and make some more sense of how to communicate gospel truths to other people in either informal, intentional to very formal, intentional conversation. So now I want to give you another diagram to help you think through how to organize your life story. Matt threw up those two frames, and so this is kind of an attempt now to frame life story. And I'm just going to summarize where we've been so far. Sovereign God is ruling in His supremacy over a fallen world we talked about last night. And God has suffered to glorify His own name and for our good, and He has purpose. This is just a summary of where you've been. It's not in your notes. It's part of your agenda. I'm just summarizing our agenda, the titles of our topics. That's all I'm doing, reminding us where we've been and the logical flow of thought that has brought us to this point. God is sovereignly ruling. He has purposed suffering to be a part of our world and existence, and He leads the way in suffering, and He is yet good and merciful and kind and gracious to help us in our suffering, to help us pursue the goal of our life, to know Him, to worship Him, and so that we help each other pursue that goal. And then we learned that our memory and our past can hinder us from pursuing that goal. And we talked then about how do we start this conversation to move past the fog, if you will, of our past and the deal with our present. And so now that brings us to this big idea that we are going to discern and prioritize conversations to make sense of the suffering and whatever it is that we're dealing with. So I'm going to use this terminology, and we'll unpack it in a little bit here. Heat is going to stand for, is the word we use for the suffering due to external forces. Remember the guy bowed under the weight of the elephant? That's heat. Harvest is the suffering, or may not even be suffering. It is the response and the consequence of our response. So harvest is both our response to our suffering or life and the consequences of it. Heart is the root of the response. Our heart is what that response comes out of. It exposes the reasons and motivations behind our responses. So we're going to talk about heat, harvest, heart in this conversation. And that will help us prioritize our response in the moment. Make sense? All right. So heat, I want to unpack this a little bit more. Heat is suffering that comes to you from external sources. It's something that happens to you. Heat is something that happens to you, okay? Harvest is painful consequence and suffering experienced from responses to circumstances, and Matt talked about that. You could have when I was 21 years old, I was starting a business, and I had about $4,000 worth of woodworking equipment that went up in smoke one night. My girlfriend and I got there when the building was in total flame, and I tried to get in, and thankfully I couldn't. The smoke was pouring through the cracks in the door I was trying to open. It was so intense I couldn't hardly breathe. Now, what I was thinking was, you know, why would I think I could get inside of a building that I can't even breathe in? But I don't know. But the guy next door told me the next day, he says, I heard you yelling and swearing. I did not know what I was doing. I was so intent on saving what I didn't have insured. Guess what I was doing? a harvest response of swearing against the God that ordained that I have a fire. Didn't make a whole lot of sense, but I was an unbeliever at the time. Heat, or heart, I mean, is the control center of our being. That's who we are. All right. So to your notes, I've come up with 10 external sources of pressure or suffering. You might use the word pressure just because it may not be all that, you might not label it as suffering, but it's some kind of pressure against us. That's what I'm talking about when I talk about heat. So where does it come from? Well, Satan, and we're not going to spend a lot of time on this. Satan, we all agree that this is Satan's world. He rules the world, prince of the power of the air. The fall itself. So I'm going to call this, I'm labeling this exhaustive entropy. Entropy means what is a second law of thermodynamics. All things are moving from order to disorder. There's decay in this world. Exhaustive entropy means that everything in this world is breaking down. And that causes us heat. It's difficult. It's because of the fall. The world system. Satan orchestrates a world system that creates difficulty for everybody in it. The fall itself has now created personal entropy. And what I'm describing here is a concentric circle that moves more and more personal. So I'm calling this personal entropy. Because now I suffer from the effects of the fall personally, my physical deterioration, and how those deteriorations cause me to struggle. And all of us either are having this struggle or going to have this struggle. And some of us more intently than intensely than others. Number five, the flesh itself, the noetic effect. There is internal distress. I am prone to depression and sadness and grief or shame or some kind of confusion because I live in a body that doesn't function well and it's suffering from the effects of sin. And I have sinful desires. That's what the flesh means. Number six, I suffer because of consequences from my own personal sin. So one example would be that you've spent too much and you have four or five credit cards maxed out. And the external pressure has come from an internal sin because your creditors are pressing in on you and shutting you off from other credit and so forth. That's a harvest issue that has created a heat that's coming from the outside. Make sense? Number seven, punishment. God punishes those who sin against him. And God punishes, but he only punishes one kind of people. Who is it? The wicked. The wicked. He doesn't punish believers. And this is the mistake a lot of believers make, that God is somehow punishing me. But if you, again, have believed in the double imputation, if you believe that Christ's righteousness has been imputed and your sin has been imputed to the cross, then God does not punish you. You can never say God is punishing you. He could be. He could be testing us. we'll come back to that, Cynthia. Number eight, we suffer because of evil from the sins of other people. Number nine, God could be disciplining us or testing us. So you're absolutely right. God is always going to be testing, disciplining, stretching, pressing us to grow because God does this to his kids. Hebrews 12 tells us that. But a lot of people really struggle with this and don't realize that the pressure from God to a son or daughter is a gift of love and graciousness so that we would partake in his righteousness. Hebrews 12 says, verse 14. He's not punishing you. Now, back to where I was in my early 30s, I was convinced he was punishing me because I had a high view of me and a low view of God. Number 10, Another source of suffering is God's sovereign pursuit of his glory. And he's always doing that. But now, can you always discern where this is coming from? No. You just know God is, that's why we got to go back to last night and trust that God is sovereignly at work. He's doing what's best for me. Just know this, here's the point of this, is that you're getting pressed from every dimension you can imagine. It's coming at you. So the red represents Satan and his control. The black represents the pressure from the world environment that I'm in. Those red arrows and black arrows are pressing in on your soul. And then the white is the flesh itself presses against you and causes you to want to sin. That's called heat. Does that make sense? You see it? It's a lot. Everywhere you look, you are being pressed. Why? Because we are in a fallen world. So that little drawing you got here is to help you begin to think in categories. So now I've got heat coming at me. And it's coming at me from all sides and in a myriad of ways. And many of those I don't even know about. It's just there, right? Then there's harvest. The consequences of normal cause and effect harvest of personal choices. Not necessarily bad or evil or foolish. Just normal cause and effect of personal choice. So, for example, I've liked French fries. For 60 years, I've liked French fries. And now my doctor is chewing on me about cholesterol. So there's a harvest. It's still good. Our fallen nature, flawed thinking. There's a dissonance, there's a disconnect between, and I recognize, remember that diagram way at the back in the beginning, in the pre-fall culture of the garden, there's peace, total peace. Peace in my own heart and soul, and peace between God and me, and peace between Eve and me, right? It's gone. And we're fallen creatures. And I'm emotion-driven now, where something happens and my emotions want to drive the train instead of truth. And then I get so angry, and we're going to talk about this in a couple hours here, last session. I want to say, you made me mad. I want to say that, because it feels that way. But theologically, I can never say that. Because you can't make me mad. There's nobody or anything that can make me mad. Theologically speaking, that's my stated theology on anger. Now, my functional theology, trust me, you'll make me mad. But we'll talk about that. But we're fallen creatures, emotion-driven, and we can be foolish and make rash decisions driven by very narrow-sighted, sinful choices. The harvest comes at us, I should say, because of consequences of our own life. We're fallen, and God is punishing us. We're being disciplined. So harvest is the response to the heat. Okay, so here's, now we have this going outward. Harvest is my response. And it's critical to begin thinking about these two dynamics, because we're going to talk about change. So why is this important when we talk about change? These two words, heat and harvest. Connect the dot. Why is it important to understand the difference between heat and harvest if we're going to undertake change? Yeah, I can't change this. Who can? God, God can change this, but I can't. Some of this, maybe. I might be able to change some of the heat. For example, if I'm working for a crooked boss who's pressing me to lie or steal or cheat or be unethical, I can change that heat and find a different job. But generally speaking, I can't change this. But generally speaking, I can change this. Guess what? I do an awful lot of fussing over what's happening here, which is why we started here, the beginning. Understand that the heat is an orchestrated event by a supreme sovereign God who is exercising his kindness in my life. And he expects my responses to come out of a heart that's thinking rightly. Third part here is the mind. When we use the word heart, we're talking about everything about you that you can't bury when you die. The heart is everything about who you are that doesn't go in the grave. It is your thinking, your mind, your emotions, your volition. It is the essence of who you are. It's what's going to exist for eternity. It's your soul. Same thing. Mind, soul, heart. That's what we're talking about. And so the heart as the control center of who we are is what produces our sinful, foolish, man-centered thinking. It is the pride of life, the state of mind, the arrogant, self-centered, autonomous pursuit of living. It includes the will. Remember the table, the mind, the will, and the emotions. This is the essence of who we are. And that heart, mind, will, and emotion is what causes the harvest. It is the heart's response to the heat. Right? We want to get to the heart of the matter, which is literally the human heart, that is the process center of who we are. You making sense? The lust of the flesh, the lust of the eye, and the pride of life. And you see this here in your handout. The pride of life, that's a state of mind. The passion is the lust of the flesh, or you might say the sensation that we go after. And the lust of the eye is the substance, the things that we see and desire. And it's also the patterns or the affections, the life habits that drive us. That's what we're talking about when we talk about the heart. Making sense? So now the heart expresses itself as we respond. And that's what we want to look at. So when we have problems, we think, remember that little path I drew? The beginning of that path is right here. We have to assess, okay, what's coming at me and what's coming out of me and why is it? That's where we're going. And so it can be, these are examples. You can't see it. Never mind. We'll worry about it later. Understanding how we respond. In four dimensions, we're back to this. The vertical, internal, horizontal, and external relationships. I'm responding to that. This is how I think. We're back to this. Remember this? This function here is what I'm talking about right here. Okay? And that is a product of everything that has happened to me up until this point and all the things I believe up until that point. Make sense? Yep. Mm-hmm. It is the result of how we have perceived, how we have interpreted, and the things that we have believed up until this point in our life. That produces what we value, which produces the reaction, the responses. And Ben's going to talk about that even more. So here's a question. Some of the one of the most difficult conversations I've ever had of someone who was suffering from a significant amount of life experience and memories. Lots of heat over many years had caused a significant belief system that was very, very broken, which produced a harvest that was unspeakable. Pretty difficult. Well, guess what? This happened years ago. And yet there was a refusal to look at his response to this and recognize that this was something that he experienced. It was bad. It was horrible. But at some point, you got to take ownership. At some point, you got to recognize there's a difference between response, harvest, and heat, and you have to own it. So in order to help him, what I drew this thing here, and that really made sense to him. And then I said, okay, let's take all of the pain that this represents and turn it into a graph. And I said, now tell me, if this represents all of your trouble and pain and suffering, how much of the pain and suffering came from heat and how much of it came from harvest? That was a really helpful question to be asking of him, because I had an opinion, and it was pretty strong opinion, but he was not in a place where I could tell him, because he was so hurt and bitter. So he looked at, I gave him the paper and the pen, and he looked at it, and he looked at it, and he looked at it. And then he went like this. Now, what does that tell you? Nothing. Until you ask him. I said, which one is heat and which one is harvest? And I was just holding my breath. What I was afraid he was going to say was the harvest was the little piece and the heat was the big one. But he didn't. He didn't. Which was really helpful. Yeah. So then I said, what do you think was my next question? Or you might have a better one. What would you ask next? If he said this is harvest, what is he really saying? Yes, and most of his pain was self-inflicted. Yeah, but I couldn't tell him that. He had to say it himself. And so that's the value of what wisdom and listening to help him come to a conclusion that he really needed to come to. I'm not looking to rub his nose in it. God forbid that I would do that. But if we can't change the heat, and the only thing he can do is change the way he responds, then he has to come to this conclusion. That's the loving thing to do, is to help him take ownership, you see. So the question always ought to be, how much of this is heat and how much is harvest? And you and I, all of us need to be asking that question. How much of it is heat and how much of it is harvest? In fact, I'm sure that all of you are going to be faced with conflict between two people. So if this diagram is helpful, then where would be a passage that would describe the principle we're illustrating? Matthew chapter 7. If you have any relationships with anyone in relationships, you ought to know Matthew 7, 1 through 5. This is one general thing I do with married couples. I will get here sometime. And depending on their ability to be shepherded, I will get here sooner rather than later. Matthew 7, 1 through 5. judge not that you be not judged. Let me skip down. Verse 3. Why do you see the speck that is in your brother's eye, but do not notice the log in your own eye? What's the literary style of that question? Hyperbole. Hyperbole. When's the last time you went to an eye doctor who came into the room with a log hanging out of his eye? But that's the illustration. I mean, you'd cut and run if he came to try and help you with a speck and he had a 2x4 out of his eye. Jesus is actually calling on the ridiculous to help us see, actually, this is ridiculous. If you don't ask, search me and know me first, there's a problem. And what is the problem? What does it say? How can you say to your brother, let me take the speck out of your own eye when there is a log in your own eye? What's the implication? You can't. You can't do that. In fact, there's a reason why you can't. You hypocrite, first take the log out of your own eye, then, see that first then? Okay, what's that saying? Then you will see clearly to take speck out of your own brother's eye. What is the implication? What's it saying? Yes, why?
Well, I'm the only one I can do anything about.
That's true, that's a principle here. There's another implication here right in the text. What's the word then saying?
Okay, I will see more clearly when I do that.
And what's the implication? You can't see clearly until you do log hunting. And so the principle here is generally applied in this case, in every case. Lord, let me log hunt. Help me see what you want me to see. Help me learn about my own heart before I worry about anything else going on. Why? Because you're in control of this, and this is a God-ordained event that presses me to be perfect and complete, lacking nothing. Count it all joy because your circumstance is meant to make you more like Christ. The joy comes from not the circumstance, not the pain. Remember Matt said, he's not in this for the inflicting pain. He's in it for the results of what the pain brings. Log hunting is critical. That's the principle here. And so, if you think about your own trouble, or you think about troubles from other people, I just call it a trouble pie. It's very helpful to begin to identify what's going on in a person's life, to help them understand, what can I do? How can I respond to this? How can I change and grow, even though my circumstances aren't changing?
So then with a follow-up, you asked us what a follow-up question yeah. would be when we were there and no one responded. So would love to know what your thought on that is. But his perspective has, instead of being a victim, he's now realizing that most of his trouble is self-induced. So then the step that we were taken to next was...
Yeah, great question. Love the way you said this, because when he came, his identity was exactly this. I'm a victim. That's exactly what the problem was. And here, how would you identify what's going on here? What word would you use, or words?
Accountability.
Good. Accountability. Okay. Cause a perpetrator. Anybody else? The foolish heart we were talking about. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very foolish responses. Understandable? Absolutely. Think about the Leaning Tower. What were his conclusions? Oh, okay. I get it. I understand now why this has become such a life-dominating issue, because he's come to wrong conclusions. Very, in his mind, they're crystal clear. In his mind, they're absolutely true. In fact, it doesn't matter what kind of evidence you're giving to the contrary, he knows it's true. And so this was my attempt to help him recognize something radically different had to happen, and he had to take ownership of where he was. So where do you go from that? It all depends on the person, the circumstance. It would never be the same for a different person. But so you might ask, well, let me finish through this and keep asking that question, because I think this will help you. So you start to describe the heat. Let's identify the heat. I do this an awful lot with people whose lives are really complex and complicated. So I'll make a trouble pie for every individual. And I've seen some that I just use a regular notebook paper or a printer paper to draw the picture and the slices. I'm telling you, I've seen trouble pies with so many slices you can't count them. And the ways that people have suffered are just, you just sit there and weep with them. And it's so intense and so significant. But you have to start somewhere. So what I would ask is, let's make sure that I've heard your life story. Explain the heat. Here's what I've heard from you. You tell me if I got it right. So this now, as we talk through this trouble pie, helps me articulate back to the other individual that I've actually had wisdom in listening. I've heard you well. I understand your story. And some people will say, ah, that's not quite right. So we erase that. I do it in pencil. Erase that. Add another one. Oh, here's another slice that I didn't tell you about. You add that. Okay, anything missing? No, we got it. All right. Now we've got a story of the heat. And it's categorized in a picture where you actually admit to them that you're under that big elephant of suffering. I get it. And I'm grieving with you. It hurts. So now... Once you've got that done, you now take and start describing the harvest. What are some of the responses? So things like rage, anger, bitterness, jealousy, fear, worry, isolation, withdrawal, despair, manipulation, recklessness, foolishness. Those are words that describe harvest responses. Am I making sense? So then you ask them, and if you listen, and what I will often do most of the time now, what I'm doing is I'm asking a person to fill out a personal profile, which is pages long, probably 4, 5, 6 pages long, and then I'll ask them to write a life story. And some people will write a whole novel, which is the more the better. Seriously, the more detail they give, the better it is. So in that life story, I will pick out key descriptions and put them in place here. And so I'm using their words to help them categorize their experience. And then, now as I'm listening, guess what my goal is? Change perspective, which means I'm going to try and help them reinterpret their experience. And I want to help them recognize, I'm going to the heart, what is the reasons that they're responding in this way. But in order to get there, we've got to at least clarify what's happening. So here we go. We've got heat, we've got harvest, and then you might ask the question like I would just suggested, which is which, where's that coming from? That gives me an idea of their current perspective. And then we can start asking questions like this. And now we're back to your handout. Shame. What's going on here? Is it heat? Is it harvest? Is it shame? Unresolved guilt? Lack of forgiveness? Bitterness? Anger? Hatred? Poor theology? Creates worry? Anger and bitterness? Rebellion? Blaming God? There's all kinds of things going on here. But I don't know exactly what to do with it. I'm just describing what I see. Are these natural consequences? Is this the law of reciprocity? A fancy word for reciprocal. If you do this, you get this. You drink all your life, you get a bad liver. That's the law of reciprocity, right? Well, the fact is, you better not assume that you know. There's an awful lot of things we don't know, and you don't want to jump to conclusions about what's going on in a person's life. What you do want to do is organize the information that you have. That red says, don't assume. It looks really cool on my screen. Don't assume that you know what's going on here. The point here in this is that sometimes it's really hard to discern which one of these three pieces that your information fits in. And be careful that you don't force an assumption or a conclusion. Proverbs 18:13 says, don't answer a matter before you hear it. Don't be a foolish, shameful fool. The idea of this is I want to understand what a major goal I had in coming up with this exercise, excuse me, is I want to understand, I will say this to you, I want to understand your world the best another person can possibly understand. And so I'm going to listen and listen and listen, and I want to give you feedback to make sure I got the picture. So I want to hear you well. Second thing I want to do is I want to feel it. If you're hurt, I want to feel your hurt. And if you are bitter, I want to understand and embrace and get a sense of what it feels like to be betrayed so that I am compassionate with you. I want to get it. I want to get all of it. I want to get the mind, the will, the emotion. I want to understand it the best I can. And this diagram has helped me do that. You figure out your way. This is a way. But one thing that is important, Cynthia, you talked about it, is at some point, a person has to come to where they're willing to be accountable to God and think the way God wants them to think. All right. So how do you do this? How do you get to the heart of the issue? Out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. You keep your heart with all diligence. Out of it flow the springs of life, the issues of life. So here's some questions that help you discern your own heart or heart, the hearts of other people. What did you get that you didn't want? Or what did you lose that you thought you needed? And Ben is going to take this idea and unpack it even more this next session. What did you want so badly that you were willing to sin to get? Is a very heart diagnostic question. What did you lose that you were willing to sin when you lost it? Consider questions that address all dimensions of all four dimensions of life. So, am I done at 2:15, Ben? All right. Here's an acronym that has been helpful. I stole the idea from Paul Tripp and added to it and put it into an acronym. Here's a progression of questions that will help you think through life. And we're going to unpack this in two sessions, and we're going to tie this to emotion. And I think there will be some aha moments that will help you sort through your own life as well as helping other people. So the acronym is SMART. The S is a question that gets to the situation. Tell me what's happening. What's going on? Your kids come home from school. tell me about your day. What was going on? The question is getting at the situation, and you ask many, many questions as they tell you about how unfair their teacher was and how hard the test was and all that stuff. Tell me more. Tell me more. Tell me more. Second theme of questions then is tell me what's going on in your mind. What did you think about what was happening? How did you feel about that is another way to ask that question. What went through your mind? You don't say, what were you thinking? That's one way to say it, but that's the question you're asking. Gently ask, tell me what you were thinking. What did you think about that? Third question gets to the action. What did you do in response to the event? Tell me what you did. And you can ask a bunch of questions to unpack that theme, and then eventually you want to get to, well, what was the result of your actions? Now, these are questions that Paul Tripp has used in Instruments in the Redeemer's Hands. You probably recognize it. What were the results? And the point he makes here is that you're teaching the logical flow of thought of human relationship in response to the harvest issue. Something happens, you think about it, you act, there's a result. And we're going to talk about this in two sessions. And I hope that what you learn from that really gives you some light bulb moments. But this is a question then leads us to the last theme, is the T of the acronym, did you get the trophy that you were looking for? Did you get what you wanted? And I have a worksheet here that I give people. It's just called a SMART journal. It's put in a spreadsheet, the same kind of questions. The first time I used this, this lady was very diligent. She had six events filled out on one page, which is the way it's designed to be worked. At the end, did you get what you wanted? There were six no's in a row. She came back, she looked at that, and she said, I had no idea. I've been doing this for years, and I didn't realize I'm doing the same thing. I didn't realize I'm not getting what I wanted. And the journal itself kind of gave her an aha moment, like, huh. So this journal is designed to help a person think about their thinking and start to process. Remember, we're going to talk about this whole drawing I made. What are we going to change? This helps you start thinking about your thinking. Did God get what God wanted is the final question. Or I like to say it this way. Did God get from you what he died for in this situation? That's the idea of the SMART journal. It can be a very helpful way to take people through this heat, harvest, heart journey of unpacking what's happening. Well, your last page gives you a series of questions, and I'm just going to let you take them. But I would urge you, we talked about this during lunch break, I would urge you to begin a conscious effort to learn how to ask good questions. One of the things that I find very interesting when you get to a small group or a dinner with a group of people and the conversation is flowing, it's just natural conversation, I'm amazed at how much rich information doesn't happen because people are so willing to talk when somebody else speaks. If you would just let that person talk and then ask follow-up questions, oh my, what the riches that you would gain if you would just ask questions. What causes you to say that? What causes you to come to that conclusion? How did you feel about that? Questions like that. Learn to develop a sanctified curiosity that causes you to ask questions, because the heart of a man is like deep waters, but a man of understanding will draw it out. That's what these questions are designed to help you think about. There's questions about patterns, and this is from our life story, part of our life story questions that might help you give some thought to that. A couple of books for you to consider: Brad Bigney's Gospel Treason, very helpful book. It's here for purchase. How Does Sanctification Work? David Powlison, just a new book, and Jeremy Pierre's book, Dynamic Heart in Daily Life. I borrowed some of his language to make that little chart, that table chart, came from his idea. So those are some things that you can consider to help you pursue understanding your own heart and help other people. And Ben is going to come now and surprise you all, because he does things differently. Oh, good, good.